And we're rolling. Welcome to Tim and Brian's, or Brian and Tim's podcast. We have no idea what it's going to be called.
We'll find out in probably about 10 minutes.
Or what the format is.
In 10 minutes.
And it's we were just talking while we were warming up that the weird thing about podcasts is it's just guys sitting around talking, and you forget that there's actually people listening. If you're lucky.
If you're lucky, right. But like I said, it's the horrible thing. Like, what if no one listens? Like, but what if they do? You know, like, you think back of all the crap you say. It's like you were saying, when you're on the air, on the radio.
Yeah, when I'm on the radio, it's like it's always like a loaded gun. I always think of that microphone as a loaded gun.
Mm-hmm.
You always make sure, you know, you treat it through that microphone with a respect. But when I do these podcasts, it's like, you know, what's the big deal? And then all of a sudden, people are saying, "Oh man, I loved what you said on that podcast about whoa,
yeah, <you're> like,
okay." Then all of a sudden, go through the mental file. What did I say?
People start telling me what I said, and you're like, "That guy sounds like an a-hole. I don't think I like that guy at all. I said that." You know, with radio, I always do the. I have a mom filter. My mom is a very proper lady, and so she doesn't know swearing in front of my mom, stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know,
no. Well,
we all do. I can just click the mom filter on, and I'm not gonna. Certain things are just not gonna come out of my face the way.
Well, as comics, which we both are, you have that too, because you're aware that, you know, sometimes you'll do a venue that has certain limitations on what you can say, and
yeah.
It's, you know, you automatically put the speech indicator on mom.
Yeah, and it is the same. And my thing is, like, if you told me I can say the F word one time, if I say it once, it's going to be 100 times or whatever. But as long as I turn it off, it'll never come out one time.
Yeah.
You know?
But it wants to.
Yeah. But it opened it when it's clawing at the basement.
So here's what it is. We're just starting a podcast here. Right now it is a no-name podcast. We have absolutely no idea what we're going to call this or how long it's going to run. What we have agreed on is that there's going to be several segments.
Yes.
That you know, when it stops, the subject has to change. Kind of like freeze.
Yes,
in
like
an
freeze.
Game.
Well, I like what you said. Your analogy. This is like the genesis of the podcast in a biblical sense. Like, we don't even have the name or the exact format figured out. First, there's light. Let there be recording. And now that it's recording, I guess we should figure this stuff out.
Then segment two, we'll make some animals, and then segment three.
Segment three, we're going to make fake dinosaur bones to confuse the hell out of everybody. It's going to be hilarious.
So I'm looking at the clock right now because we said 7 minute segments, and we're already.
I'm thinking 10. I think you're right on the 10.
Right on the 10.
I was thinking about that. We just recorded another podcast because we're machines, and I was just thinking about what a friggin' blowhard I was. And I was like, man, those blowhardiness is not going to fit into 7 minutes.
Okay. then that's decided. So let it be written. So let it be done.
Yes.
This will be 3 10-minute segments, and then we can always do an overtime segment.
Yeah, that's cool. I like
but
that
let's,
idea.
Let's keep it at...
Lest it be, you know, too scintillating to be all contained within the boundaries yeah. of 30 minutes.
Yeah, well, we could always, you know...
But I like the boundaries of 30. You know what? I'm a big fan of haiku, not to take the podcast in a too hoity-toity direction, you know, for those Japanophiles out there. But I like the boundaries. You know, that beat poetry crap where you didn't have to rhyme or nothing? It sucked. It was stupid. It was just a bunch of... drunk hippies on Benzedrine snapping their fingers and letting crap pour out of their
haiku
faces.
Haiku is so Asian because it's like morning calisthenics.
Yes, exactly.
it's like forcing you out of bed at a set hour.
It's like doing jumping jacks with 100 other guys in the same white jumpsuit. And love it. I love the boundaries of it. I always liked poetry with boundaries when I was an English
straying off here. Have you heard about that guy? I don't have his name, and I don't feel like Googling it. He's a poet. He's like a poet in Ohio, I think.
That's interesting already. You've got me already.
He was submitting his work, and just nothing. It's like, well, thanks, but no thanks. So he picked a pen name that was Asian. And suddenly he's winning awards.
Wow. That's interesting.
It's amazing.
Do you think people thought he was, do you think that's like a PC thing? Like they were trying to reward I don't know. I feel like,
Or do they think
he was deeper than he was?
Exactly.
Like the Seinfeld. You're not Chinese. You know, the, when they finds out Jerry Seinfeld's girlfriend's name is Donna Chang, but she's a white lady. And everybody believes her advice until they find out she's white, and then they're furious.
It's exactly it. It is exactly it. It's a real life example. And I think when you read poetry with an Asian name of the author, I think you tend to do the accent in your head.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's interesting. I read a lot of Haruki Murakami, this Japanese novelist, and it's translated. But I was saying to my wife, I'm pretty sure this guy is really deep, but there's a little part of me that thinks I'm just crediting him in some degree. I'm assuming there's stuff like, I'm sure there's stuff I'm missing, but I'm just giving him a little bit of an extra benefit of the doubt. But I think he's probably pretty good.
So, do we keep running on this theme now? Just make the first one the time, and then worry about the title in the next segment.
I think let's go for the title now. Let's get ambitious.
Okay,
I like it.
Okay, we got 4 minutes to come up with a title.
We got 4 minutes to come up with a title. That's good.
Here's the one I came up with, and it was based on the idea that we were going to do three segments.
Sure,
10-minute segments would be the rule of three.
Hmm, that's not bad.
Which is kind of a comedy term for those.
Oh,
who
yeah,
don't
rule
know
three.
Comedy.
Yeah,
jokes always have to be done in three.
Yeah, that's
but it's
not
also,
bad.
But it's three is also like a real stable. It's a numerology, I believe.
Absolutely,
is that there's a reason why we're here at Acme Comedy Company. There's a reason why the number is 612-338-6393. Three is a very important number to.
Oh,
people who are good at poetry.
Yeah, no, that's very interesting. Hey, it's the Trinity.
The poetically gifted.
True, the Irish, they got their Trinity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Them Catholics, like my
So
my
yeah,
lady.
So that's what I was thinking, the rule of three, but the problem is it's just two of us. So
well, the third one's Jesus. He's always here with us, shepherding our podcast.
I wonder if people are going to feel cheated that
when there was dead R on the podcast, that's when he carried it.
You know, of course, you know. Then that way, we always have an opening if we do want to bring in, a third person.
I like rule of three. I like the enigmatic nature of two people on the rule of three. But it's about the three segments. Yeah, rule of three. Plus, you're right. It's a great comedy rule. That's one of those. Not to get too stand up-y, but you know. That's one of those when I first started stand up, like, well, you want to break these formats, you want to be so iconoclastic, and then you just find out there's certain things that they just work.
Yeah.
The rule of three.
Yeah.
The rule of three for a reason.
That has been my life. I have spent my life trying to find an easy way out. I will spend, and I've brought this up before. I was always the guy who fixed the Christmas lights, and I'm old enough to remember when Christmas lights were something valuable. And
sure.
That you would actually fix the Christmas lights, and I was always the kid. I was always the one that would get the job of fixing the Christmas lights.
You mean like taking the bad bulbs out and putting the fresh bulbs in?
Making the string working again.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
I just did that every Christmas. I would pull out the lights and untangle them and then go through them and find the bad bulbs and get them working again. And I did that up until one day in, like, it was 1992. I'm working on it, and I have a bunch of bad bulbs, and so I go to the store to buy some bulbs and realize that I could get an entirely new string for $2.99.
Right.
That I had spent 12 hours for $2.99. And I thought to myself, you know, if you want to work like a poetically gifted American, you get paid like a poetically gifted.
Yeah, oh, yes.
It's like a slaving in the iPod factory.
Yeah, yeah, the haiku wages are also themselves small and discreet. Right?
So anyway, that's like I said, that's been my life, is always trying to spending more time than is financially lucrative to find another way. And that's why, 36 years into comedy, I'm still an unknown.
Hey, I'm a guy with 5 jobs who somehow still manages to make the exact same amount of money I've always made since I got out of college. No matter what, I'm like a goldfish that grows to its thing, except for, like, it's the opposite of that. Like, no matter how much I work and how successful I get, I only make 19 grand a year forever. I'm just reconciled to that. Also, I'm going to be the only guy. I'll host the Tonight Show, and they'll pay me 19 grand a year, and I won't be allowed to do extra work.
And that's a wrap. That's,
there we go.
That's our first segment of The Rule of Three. Thank you all for tuning in. We still have two more segments coming up today.
Literally be right back.
And absolutely. Entirely new subject.
Boom. There we go.
Three, two, well, we'll get better at this.
That 10 minutes is the way to go.
Yep.
10 minutes is good. So the second one to do intro kind of stuff?
Yeah, we'll introduce ourselves.
But then did Day of the Clown Cried for three?
Then what?
Day of the Clown Cried for a third one?
Yeah,
I think
absolutely.
I think that's a great idea. I'm all in. Cool.
Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Segment two so fast. So fast.
Unbelievable. Welcome, everybody. You're listening to The Rule of Three. I'm Tim Slagle, and over here on the other side of the room.
Still Brian Miller.
And we did not introduce ourselves in the first segment.
On purpose. That was, you might seem like amateur podcast bumbling, but in fact was a part of an elaborate plan.
Well, it was kind of like Asian poetry.
Yes.
As we decided to base our first show on the book of Genesis.
Like Asian poetry, I think. I don't. showing my knowledge of both Asian poetry and religion.
Well, excuse me. I believe that Israel is in the Middle East.
Oh, there you go.
And is halfway part there. Of the Asian continent.
There you go.
So, there you go.
Sold. There you go.
You might not think of the Torah as Asian poetry, but in fact it is, technically.
Huh. You kind of blew my mind there a little bit. See, we couldn't fit that into 7 minutes, that kind of realization. That's a minute eight bullshit right there. Oh, that's one thing we didn't decide. What's the rules on the swearing? If we were trying to be on the radio, should I not say be out?
You know, it's going to come out, but I'd rather.
Yeah.
I'd rather not.
All right. Gotcha.
Emo Phillips has a great line, I probably heard him say it once, and it's only with age now that I realize the wisdom in it. And he said, using the F word as a comedian is like a martial arts black belt pulling out a gun.
Yes, I've heard him. I love that line. Yeah,
it's absolutely right. Is we are supposed to, you know, we are supposed to be professionals. We are supposed to craft our art. So the fact that we can say, you know, as one person told me once, it's actually the guy who is now known as Haywood Banks.
Oh yeah, I know. I work with his nephew Nate Weatherup.
That's his nephew.
Yeah, it's Haywood Banks' nephew.
Ha. Huh. I did not know that. I should.
Comedy trivia.
Yeah, no kidding. So he said that he always appreciated, and I think it was because I was working with him and he didn't want me to swear before him and I was doing it.
Sure.
Now that I look back, it was a nice way to say cool it. But he actually said that it's amazing that when Mr. T, so you know how long ago this was.
Yeah.
When he calls someone a fool, it sounds like the most vulgar profanity ever uttered, is he is so good at calling someone a fool.
Sure.
And it's...
He makes it his own F word.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So. No, you know, I have the thing, like, I don't really curse that much on stage, but then on a podcast, when I get casual, like we were talking about earlier, you kind of forget that you're being recorded, you're just talking, and I realize I curse a lot more off stage than I do on stage. Yeah. My mother would be very upset about that.
Yeah, yeah, and of course, I'm hoping, you know, if we don't, radio, this might actually get picked up on radio.
Yeah, I'm with you. The theme of the show, boundaries. Artificial boundaries to make us all a little better.
Well, that would be the rule in the rule of
the
three.
The rule in the rule of three. Maybe the rule is we can swear three times each on the show.
So anyway, Brian, do you want to do your bio first?
Yeah, sure. Live in Minneapolis, stand-up comedian and writer, or probably more writer and stand-up comedian in that order in terms of how I started. I was a newspaper editor for a while, and then I decided... I was covered in enough park board elections and Senate races, and I said I will never again participate in real society. I refuse.
Well, you know, I've read newspapers lately, and it doesn't seem like they're using editors much anymore.
No, it doesn't.
It's you always see these mistakes that are spell check mistakes that people are so reliant on the spell check.
It's funny that you say that. The only other non-comedy gig that I do is I proofread for City Pages and Minnesota Monthly. So once a week for the newspaper and once a month for the magazine, I just go with the red pen and I just sit down and just read the magazine and circle all the mistakes. People don't pay people for that much anymore.
No,
that's gone by the wayside. The internet,
I guess that comes with the Special Olympics view that society has today is like everything's a winner. Mistakes are okay. You still get the trophy.
Yeah, and then also the internet. Nobody proofread blogs, and everybody got used to it, like, well, it's a blog. You don't expect it to be spell checked and everything. People got so used to that that then they just carried that over into newspapers. And newspapers are all too happy to not pay people to do things because they don't have a lot of money floating around. They love not paying people. That might be what they're best at. But yeah, so the newspapers started doing stand up here in Minneapolis. And I got hired at Acme a few years back. Best club in the world.
Absolutely.
And always love being here. So yeah, work here and travel all around doing comedies. And I write about football for my buddy Kostaki Economopoulos for the Bob and Tom show. And I'm also a snooty fiction writer. But
wow.
Yeah.
Published?
Not yet.
Good.
When I was younger, I had to publish some really terrible stuff. And then I took a while off and I'm back in the game.
Oh, cool.
So I've got a new collection I'm working on.
Fun.
Yeah, that's my golden parachute. I want to find a job that makes even less money than comedy and fail into that.
And if that doesn't work, my hobby of blacksmithery.
On the side, my hobby, though, is I'm a stock trader. I make bajillions of dollars, but that's just a thing I do for fun. It's a shame. I don't even keep the money.
I'm Tim Slagle. I started doing comedy July 4th, 1979.
July 4th. That's so cool.
Yeah. It's I don't often talk. I'll say July 4th, 1979, as I usually mumble off, because I did that makes it 36 years now.
Wow.
And anything, you know, over 30 just sounds depressing. And the fact is most of the people I work with are as old as I've been doing. I've been doing comedy since most people I know have been alive.
I was born in the 80s, so yeah.
So it's I came at a great point in comedy when it was just exploding. It was like did you ever go surfing?
No, sorry. I'm bad with the yes ands.
The what?
I'm bad with the yes ands from improv, you know? Yes, and? You know? I'm bad with the yes ands. I smoked weed with surfers. Does that count?
Yeah. The idea is you're supposed to paddle into the wave and you're supposed to be getting going as fast as the wave.
Mm-hmm.
But I found, because I was athletically challenged, that you could also just stand and wait for the wave to start breaking right over to you and dive in it with the board.
Oh, sure.
And it's kind of a cheater way to get in. And that's kind of where I was. Is comedy, this whole big wave of comedy was building up behind me. And I was just at the right point at the right time. I went professional long before I probably should have, if ever.
How fast, like how long was it before you started doing like, I mean, not just
3 years.
Like 20...
3 years I was full time.
3 years you were full time. Okay, yeah.
Three years I was full time. Yeah, it's very fast.
Yeah, but the money was much bigger in comedy back then. It was
stupid huge.
You could make a living as an MC back then, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's what I was.
Yeah, I mean, doing 10, 15 up top, right? What would you get paid for an MC week back in the day?
A grand.
Whew. Yeah. I've headlined clubs for, less than, I'm sure.
Well, that's the funny part is that I've moved up from MC to headliner, and the money is exactly the same.
So you're saying is I'm still going to make $90,000 for the next.
Yeah, no inflation bump. There's been no bump. There's been no cost of living increase. There's been no promotion increase.
Comics to change with the times, but the money stayed the same. So for all, we all still think it's 1979. No wonder we're all saying words you're not supposed to say.
Yeah. So basically, I'm just kind of staying at this point in my career. I'm trying to stay on a horse that probably did not want me on it in the first place. I had the gift of Sid Vicious and Ringo Starr. Just, I was in the right place at the exact right time. And,
yeah, you had the dreadlocks that society needed.
Well, not at first.
No, but, that was later. I've seen the dreadlock photos. I love that.
Yeah, if you want, yeah, you can go to my website, The Gallery of Hair. Just click on hair, and you can see the various. As one comic said, I spent more time searching for my hook than a blind pirate on shore leave. And it's absolutely true. If I had spent as much time working my act as I did sitting in the chair flirting with my beautician, I probably wouldn't be an unknown after 36 damn years.
You'd still be making MC money.
So yeah, that's me. I'm still working along. I've done a little bit of writing and a little bit of comedy, and I think that's about the end of segment one, two.
Said another segment flies by. That's very reassuring. I like that. It makes me feel better.
That's my sister's ringtone. I don't know how it got here, but it kind of works.
It works great. Yeah, it's like, oh, hey, well, we're doing good. Affirmation. Yeah, 10 minutes is very natural, I think.
Yep.
Numero tres.
Okay. In 3, 2, 1, go. Hi, welcome back. You're listening to The Rule of Three with Brian Miller and Tim Slagle, and this is now our third segment of our first show.
According to the rules, it is.
It's and what we've decided to talk about this one, there's a subject, and when Brian and I were working together, or at least hanging out together, I think when I had mentioned this obscure movie
that I'm obsessed with.
And you had never heard about it till that point, right?
No, oh no, I'd heard about it.
You had heard about it?
I'm a big Jerry Lewis fan from way back, and I've been obsessed with this for years.
I don't remember. I know I told somebody about
it. You use it in an analogy that was so stunningly perfect. I don't know if you want to share the analogy.
Yeah,
the morning radio.
Yeah, I think I can. Now, of course, I'm wondering, should I have you tell it, or should I cut my own throat?
Why don't you tell it? No, I don't think it's a fan. I think it's great.
Oh yeah,
well, we got to tell them the movie.
That's right. When we were talking about this podcast,
yes,
is that we should try to do a morning podcast, because a lot of podcasts tend to be the afternoon. They tend to be the all things considered podcast.
Yeah,
and there's really not a lot of funny morning show podcasts. And the morning show,
a little drive time,
right? And what I said was that the gist of The Day the Clown Cried was that Jerry Lewis, for those of you unfamiliar, Jerry Lewis teamed up with Dean Martin way back in the days, was a over-the-top. He was probably the Robin Williams of his day, was an over-the-top comedian.
Most famous comedian alive for a while, I would say.
Yeah. Did a bunch of movies. He is rumored to have been a genius in France. Went on, his movies kind of just got repetitive. They were all kind of the same theme.
He was really caged into that childlike character, which got less and less attractive the older he got.
Right, and as he got older, he actually turned into more like a Vegas guy.
Yes, and it perfectly exploited in the great Martin Scorsese movie, The King of Comedy, which is one of my favorite dark comedies.
Right.
Where he plays a Tonight Show style host.
Without getting too off track, and then he hosted the Muscular Dystrophy telethons.
What he's most famous for, wouldn't you say, at this point?
Probably for most people today. Mm. They would recognize him as the Labor Day the old fat guy on the Labor Day telethon.
Yep.
And did that till like a couple years ago, and when I think his health and demeanor made it no longer possible for him to be associated with the association.
You know, it's bad when the muscular dystrophy people go, whew, finally, that guy's gone. We can just get back to having muscular dystrophy in peace.
For those unaware, is that his movie career ended with a film that he had directed and rewritten. Mm-hmm. I think there was an original.
A very popular script that was courted by like Dick Van Dyke and some really big players, some really interesting people were looking into making that movie.
And was the title the same?
Yes, it was The Day the Clown Cried then too. Yeah. It was a very like hot script in a certain way.
Huh. And is this to put it into today's context, was was it or was it not? Is there's two films that are quite similar that have come out recently? Is Jacob the Liar?
Yes.
And Life is Beautiful.
Yep.
We're both very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Were either of those based on that original script, or does he have the
wonder.
Total? Yeah, does he have total rights to the script? Or
I mean, the idea is broad. The idea, of course, being that he plays a clown in Germany who, in the original script, it was a very dark redemption tale, not really a comedy. The clown is sent to the to a concentration camp, or rather sent to a labor camp for making fun of Hitler, for being disrespectful, because he's a clown. And he kind of finds redemption when he winds up being shuffled inadvertently on board a train to a concentration camp, where his redemption is he's forced to lead Jewish children into the gas chamber. It's the darkest premise of all time, but it's supposed to be he like finally finds redemption in a way that he can help these kids.
I shouldn't be laughing at that.
Oh, I will. But it's funny because it's the worst idea for a movie of all time.
It's an uncomfortable laugh.
It's the worst.
I'm laughing because I'm uncomfortable.
It's so awful. But at least when you think of it as a drama, it's like, well, that's pretty heavy, man. But the word is that when Jerry gets a hold of the script, he decides he needs to put his Jerry Lewis stamp on.
Oh, I'm the choking and the my burning eyes.
And that's how people know Jerry is really through Professor Frink from The Simpsons is a Jerry Lewis impression. That's most people's association with it now, I bet.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, that whole character is just a Jerry Lewis impression. Anyhow, so Jerry tries to make the movie hilarious and to add some kind of antics to it. And he renames the character Helmut Dork, for instance. And so the movie...
Was the title of the script originally The Day of the Clown Cried?
I'm fairly sure, yeah. That was always the title, I think. I could be wrong. There's a great Spy magazine article about it from the 90s. But so the movie was, depending on who you ask, the financing fell apart. There was disasters behind the scenes. I filmed in Sweden, I guess, with the European money. And the financiers keep falling through. So Jerry keeps putting more and more of his own money into it. And this is going to be the big project that legitimizes him as a dramatic actor, the way that Dean Martin had managed to kind of break out with like the Young Lions and get his own career going. And depending on who you ask, either because the rights were so muddled. Oh, the great story is that the guy who sold them the rights, turns out the rights had lapsed 6 months prior. And so they didn't even technically own the rights to the movie they made, which is part of the distribution nightmare. But then a lot of people also say that the movie is so ungodly bad that it would have been such a disaster to release. And it's like Hollywood lore. It's the worst movie of all time. And literally the only copy that exists is a video copy that Jerry Lewis himself owns and has in a safe deposit box.
Video copy?
Yeah. I think it's like on like old videotape. It's not like a DVD, you know.
Or no, film, no, no, or no, film. But that's what I mean. Is there actually film stock of it, or is the film stock? I don't know.
I don't know if it's like a film stock print or if I read a video copy, but I don't know. I mean, there's still some mystery around it. I mean, Jerry has confirmed that he has it, that it does exist, and some people claim to have seen it, but he is the only copy.
Well, it's actually shortly after we had this discussion, it was like a week or two later.
Yes,
it was announced that Jerry is going to release the film to the Library of Congress
10 years from now.
Which to me, it's bittersweet because I loved Jerry Lewis as a kid. I'm not
me
gonna,
too.
I think any kid that grew up in the era where you could see Jerry Lewis films on mm-hmm. television. Loved Jerry Lewis.
He Family was, Jewels.
Like I said, Robin Williams, Adam Sandler, all owe their legacy to Jerry Lewis. He was the first film comedian that actually did that.
Jim Carrey? Huge
Jim
debt.
Jim Carrey, yeah.
To Jerry
another
Lewis.
One, too. All of them owe it.
Yeah.
And the fact that he finally released that film, to me, indicates that he knows that doesn't have much longer.
And that, oh, it has to be. Yeah, I think
and
so.
And that he wants to maintain control. He was so insulted for that film
mm-hmm.
that he wants to maintain control as long as he can. And by really giving it to the Library of Congress is a stipulation that they can't release it for 10 years. So that's...
Yeah, so he won't be with us when it happens. And, you know, he says in interviews, and just Sean Levy wrote an amazing biography of him. I think it's called The King of Comedy. But Sean Levy, great book about Jerry Lewis. And it's... Jerry claims in many interviews that still think the movie's great, and it's hard to tell. Is he delusional? Maybe it actually is better than we think. is he saying that out of pride, and he secretly knows it's terrible? I mean, I really don't know what he.
There's a side of me that thinks that it might be one of the most brilliant films of all time.
That's part of the thrill of the mystery, right? Like, maybe it is. Maybe the time has caught up with it.
Yeah, conventional wisdom,
probably not.
Though. Conventional wisdom.
probably not.
Yeah, I'm probably just being kind to it.
Considering how you reacted when I told you the plot of a movie you already knew, probably not. You re-remembered what a bad idea it was all over again when I told you. You're like, ooh, gah.
Yeah. No, probably not. But you know, it also could be that since Jacob the Liar and the Life is Beautiful, that the perspective has changed.
It's very possible.
Now that society has moved so far away from the actual event, which when you think, okay, we tend to think of stuff in time. When you think of the fact the film was made in 73, World War II was 43. That was 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be like looking at 1985 to a lot of people.
Jerry could have fought in World War II. I mean, he was 4F, but like he was of
age.
Have you ever noticed every guy who's 4F during World War II talks about how mad they were that they were 4F? I'm like, there's no way some of you guys weren't like, thank God I'm flat feet.
But
I can't
anyway,
blame anybody.
It is what I said to Brian that
to bring
day,
it full circle. Yes,
is that Jerry played a clown who led children to the gas chamber, and for me, that's what morning radio is.
So perfect.
It's
so dark.
Way,
it's such a grim observation, but it is so.
It's people tune in to morning radio because they want to find people that will keep them laughing. All the way into
the inevitable misery. Oh.
And that's episode 1. I hope you guys enjoyed it.
Thanks for listening.